We're looking at Psalm 139 this morning. It's found on page 974 of your Pew Bible, and you might want to follow along. This psalm is not for everybody. It really isn't. It's only for those who have ever been discouraged, or angry, or frustrated, or jealous, or greedy, or anybody who's had thoughts that they wish they didn't have, thoughts they were embarrassed by, thoughts, as one of our boys said to us one time, "I want to think that anybody can see what I'm thinking all the time, so I only think what other people would be proud of me if they saw." I didn't have a clue what he was talking about, but it sounded good. So if you've never been depressed or angry or frustrated, or if you're not harboring any bitterness in your soul, or if you keep fights going and you just keep gossiping, and if you don't have any of those kind of problems, you could probably go get an early lunch. But if you are somebody who has ever struggled with any of these issues in your life, you're in good company. Because the person who wrote this psalm lived many periods of his life in an incredibly frustrated way. He knew what it was like to hate. He knew what it was like to kill. He knew what it was like to suffer the agony of having failed God miserably. The psalmist David wrote many of his psalms at the lowest points of his life, many at the highest points of his life, and we rejoice with both kinds. Some of these psalms that we read and we benefit from were hammered out on the anvil of David's own agony. And so this psalm we read this morning is written by somebody who gets us and who gets God. It's a marvelous psalm. We've titled it, "What Does God Know?" because that's basically what David is dealing with. And as we move through the psalm, we see the first thing, we begin with the end. David ended this prayer with this psalm with a prayer. He prayed, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me, and know my troubled mind. See if there's any way in me that would be offensive to you or to other people. And oh God, lead me in a better way. Lead me in the way everlasting." It's a marvelous prayer. But I ask, is God really in that business? I mean, does God take time to search our hearts, to test our motives and our ideas? Does God really see if any of the ways in us are going to be offensive and lead us in a better way? He's a pretty busy God running a universe. Takes time and attention. And I look at my puny little life in this vast universe that God has created. The scriptures tell us that God calls forth each of the planets by name. Does he know my name? We sang it this morning. He knows my name. He knows my every thought. Is that true? Well, David wants to convince us, before he prayed this prayer, he examined that very question. Does God care? In the first movement, he said, God can guide us. He said, "Lord, guide me. Guide me into everlasting ways. Protect me. Guide me away from thoughts that are going to be damaging." And in the first six verses, he said, God can guide us because he knows us intimately. The better a counselor knows me, the better that counselor can help me. You can't counsel somebody from a distance. And what David tells us, first of all, is that this prayer, "Guide me, O God, protect me, O God, from myself," is a valid prayer because God knows us intimately. He said, "You have searched me, Lord," verse 1, "and you know me." The imagery is of a miner searching, digging in the ground, looking for that one glimmer, that one glint of gold, turning over every rock. "Search me, O God, and know me." Know me intimately. And then he said, "You know when I sit and when I rise," which is a figure of speech. Remember, we're reading poetry here. And this is a figure of speech called a merism. You know when I sit and when I rise and everything in between. He talks of this, the extremes to include the whole. That makes me a bit uncomfortable. Because sometimes when I'm sitting and sometimes when I am risen and I'm out doing stuff, I wouldn't mind if God wasn't there. Am I alone? You look so pious out there. I have a friend who says, "If you knew me like I know me, you wouldn't listen to me pray. You wouldn't listen to me preach." And that is, and if I knew you like you know you, I wouldn't preach to you. So, but what a thought. I mean, that God knows us. "You know when I sit, when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar." Well, if he didn't get you by now, that should get some of us. Some of our thoughts are embarrassing. If I said some things to people that I'm thinking about, I might not have any teeth left. I may not be alive. I don't say that with pride. I say it with honesty. And David said, "Can God guide us? Can God counsel us? Can God be there in our hard times and our good times?" He is there. And he searches us. And he knows us. He perceives my thoughts from before I have them, from afar. This is a time thing, not a distance thing. "You discern my going out and my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways." He continues again with the merism, my lying down and my going out. "Before a word is on my tongue, you, O Lord, know it completely. You hem me in. You surround me. You're in front of me and back of me. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge blows my mind." I can't even get my mind around that concept, that you are that intimately involved with me. You care that much about me. You spend that much time with me. Now, is that scary or is that comforting? Well, the answer to the question is, what does God know? It's God knows everything we tell him. When we think, when we act, and when we speak. Well, how comfortable was David with that thought? Well, he said God can guide us not only because he knows us intimately, because he's always with us. This question, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? Yeah, I get that one. Okay, if you know me that well, where can I escape? And there are two ways to think of this question being phrased. One could be, enough already. Where can I go? Where can I hide? Jeanette was telling me yesterday about reading something. Where is Jeanette? She's out there somewhere. Anyway, okay. I feel better when I know you're here. Anyway, because she needs this. Okay. I don't like sleeping in the garage, but what are you going to do? Two ways to... She was talking about... you heard about man caves, and she was talking about... She read about she shacks. Yeah, so many people building a house now, the guy has his man cave and she has her she shack. It's a place where enough already. I need to get away. I need to get away. I need some privacy. And as an extreme, believe it or not, introvert, I resonate with that. But the other way of hearing this prayer, where can I go from your spirit, is no place. God, you never not care. You're never absent. When I call upon you to help me, you're always there. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from you? From your presence? No place. And see, some of us live life as if, like this morning when we said, Our Father who art in heaven, and a telephone rings in heaven, and God picks it up. And we do our prayer, and we say, Amen, and God hangs up. And then some of those people I prayed for in my prayer, I go out and insult. Or some of those people I ask God to bless, I may go and spread some gossip about them. As if God hung up. But David said, God doesn't hang up. Where can I flee from your presence? Where can I go from your spirit? And then he said, if I go to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, in Sheol, in the place of death, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Well, if I say, maybe the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me. Even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. So whether we want to escape or whether we want to take comfort in God's presence, David tells us God is always there. And in this beautiful poetic language, he says, if I could go up to heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you're there. And he talks about the highest place you can imagine and the place beneath the earth, the place of death. For the Jew, they thought of the place of death as beneath the earth. So no matter how high, no matter how low I go, if I could rise on the wings of the dawn as the sun comes from the east and lightens the day and goes across the sky, or if I settle in the far side of the sea, David was writing in Israel, And the Mediterranean was to the west. So whether I go as high as I can go, or as low as I can go, as far to the east as I can go, as far to the west as I can go, behold, you're there. And not only are you there, your right hand will guide, your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. There is no place geographically we can escape from God. But as I was meditating on this, it occurred to me this is poetry. And yes, he's talking about heaven and the place of Sheol. He's talking about the east and the west. But he also, if you take the first of each of these couplets, he says, if I go up to the heavens, if I rise on the wings of the dawn, you're there. Well, what do those two things have in common? If I could go to the most glorious place, if I could go to the place where day begins and the dawn comes and the darkness is sent away and it becomes safe and warm, if I could go to those beautiful places, those high places, those optimistic places, those happy places, or if I make my bed in Sheol, the place of death, the place of mystery, the place nobody wants to go, or if I go to the far side of the sea as I look across the Mediterranean, even to the horizon, and it still goes on. And as a non-seafaring people, the sea was a scary, unknown place. If I could go to the best place, the highest place, the place where I'm euphoric and the place where I'm optimistic and I'm secure and I'm safe. Or if I go to the depressing place, the place of Sheol, the place of mystery, the scary place, the depressing place. The place where I wonder if my life is ever going to come back together again. The place where my weeping takes over my life. You're there. You're there. And it's there that your hand holds me. And your right hand guides me. When I'm praising God in the church, and when I'm wrestling with that lustful, that greedy thought, when I'm struggling with not picking up the phone and sharing that bit of gossip. When I'm harboring that hatred that feels so good. When I want to stir the pot and keep the controversy going and keep upsetting people and keep people angry because it feels good to be in the center of that. Oh God, you're there. You're there. You're there. You're searching me. You're examining me. Geographically, or psychologically and emotionally, David says, you're there. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to the best place or the worst place, if I go as high as I can go, as low as I can go, as far east or as far as west, you're there. Even there, your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Well, he has another option. If I say, well, surely the darkness, literally, this is what it says. If the darkness is so intense, if the darkness is so great that it bruises me, it crushes me. The darkest kind of dark you can imagine, it is so dark, I feel it. The light becomes night around me. Even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day. For darkness is as light to you. So wherever I am physically, geographically, wherever I am emotionally, whether it's light or dark, you're there. And not only are you there, your hand is guiding me. Your right hand. Three different times David uses the word hand. The first one in the first segment is the dexterity, your fingers, your this part of the hand. The next part is God's arm, the arm of strength. And the third one, your right hand, is the arm of the tool. You're like you would guide a delicate tool as a watchmaker or as a seamstress. God, you're guiding me. Well, just how good is God at functioning in the dark? Well, the third movement, David says, is God can guide us because he understands us better than we understand ourselves. Talk about dark. If I try to hide in the dark, is dark an obstacle to you? Well, David said, you created my inmost being in my mother's womb. How dark is it in there? And when David talks about our inmost being, he's talking about this fantastic interrelationship of our psychology, our brain, our thinking, and our valuing, and our willing, and how our emotions affect the way we think and function and do. All of that interrelated thing. You created that in darkness. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Psalm 19, where the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. And Dr. Sanderson and I were talking about, he's a physicist, and that's his science world. So we had a couple of email exchanges about how vast is the universe. And our scientist friend says, I don't get it. It boggles the mind. So as we search space, and we try to figure out what's out there. It's a wonderful thing. But you know, the greatest unexplored space known to us is the space between our ears. This thing called our brain. And how the brain works. And how it influences the way we value things. And how the way we value things comes back and influences the way we think. And how the way we think and feel influences what we do. And David said that incredibly complex, interwoven thing. You literally knit together in the total darkness of my mother's womb. Can I hide from you? Can I con you? Can I lie to you? Can I do something that you don't understand? Absolutely not. I'm dealing with the manufacturer of the product. You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, and I know that full well. And in addition, my frame, my physical being, was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Our younger son, John, went to medical school, and he got a used copy of Grey's Anatomy. And it was pretty beat up. So for birthday present, Jeanette and I bought him a brand new copy of Grey's Anatomy, and he gave me his old one. And I just love sitting there looking at that thing. It's, you don't want to do that before lunch, but just seeing the physical stuff we are. I mean, it doesn't even begin to compare with the first thing he talked about. But all of this, the way the sinews, the bones, the muscles, all that works together, the nerves, and even moving a finger. Even this is such an incredibly complex process. How it all works together. You did that. He uses poetically the depths of the earth, but once again, it's a reference to the darkness of the womb. You put all that together. Who knows me like you know me? Who knows how I work better than you? You know me better than I know me. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of your thoughts. If I could count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. Does God care? Does God give a rip if you're depressed? Does God want to help you when you're struggling with that thing you don't want to do? Does he rejoice with you at the birth of your grandbaby and your marriage of your kids and the graduations and living another day? You bet he does. You bet he does. Does he love you? Does he care for you? Does your life matter to anyone? Are you ever all alone? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I was teaching in the adult Bible hour this morning, the last part of 1 Samuel. And I just totally forgot what my point was. Anyway, it was a good thought. Got scared away by the empty space in there, you know. Anyway, maybe I'll think of that later, but I was going to, this wonderful illustration, I just lost it, but I'm sure it was a wonderful thought. But David is contemplating, he's in a poetic mood, and he's talking about God's thoughts and how vast they are. And he said, if I could count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. You're there. And then this little phrase, when I awake, I'm still with you. And it's almost like David said, you know, I've been in this poetic mood, and I'm off scraping the Milky Way with this beautiful poetry and the heavens and the Sheol and the wings of the dawn. And suddenly I wake up. Suddenly I come back to reality. And I'm still with you. This isn't dream stuff. This isn't theological hokey pokey. This is real life stuff. Written by a man who knew the joys and the agonies of life. Who knew the most holy moments we can imagine if you read some of his Psalms. And understands his own brokenness if you read his prayers of repentance. Who did the best and the worst. Used his brilliant mind to honor God and ultimately to destroy his own family. God can guide us because he understands us better than ourselves. And then we have this next movement. God can guide us because he loves us in spite of our most repugnant thoughts and motives. Can you think things and say things that will drive God away? Well, David ended with this imprecatory section. Look at this. Right after these gorgeous, beautiful poetry, David said, "If only you, O God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you?" And that's like a fly in a bowl of pudding. I mean, why, David, what were you thinking about? What's that in there for? Well, I don't know. But I think I know. I think what David is saying is, after all of this beautiful material about how God knows us and intimately is involved with us, he says, "Lord, I'm just going to be flat out honest with you. If it's true anyway, if everything I think you know already, in fact, you knew it before you even created me, when I was an embryo in my mother's womb, these thoughts were written in your book. So I'm just going to lay it on you, Lord. I hate these people. I despise these people. I'd like to kill them." How's that set with you? And then he comes back to that prayer that we started with. This is how he ended the psalm. "Oh Lord, I don't like these thoughts I have. I don't like thinking about how much I hate people, how much I abhor them. I don't want to spin over and over and over in my mind those things people did to me that hurt me. I don't want to sit and feel sorry for myself. I don't want to be envious and greedy and grouchy and grumpy. But you know what? I am. There are times when just flat I am. And I don't like it. I sometimes get so depressed. I don't know if I'm quoting David or me right now. You assume David. I know it's me. That I'm even afraid and embarrassed to come to God." And I think David had the same deep struggle in his own life. And so he ended this beautiful psalm by just being flat honest with God. And then he said, "Search me, O God. I understand the process. I understand how you're involved with me. And now as I end this psalm, Lord, I want to be involved in the process. Let me participate. Let me invite you in. Search me, O God, and know my anxious thoughts. You understand these disturbing thoughts and ideas and feelings that I have better than I do. I need your hand to guide me. I need your right hand to hold me, or I'm going to go out and do something really bad. In fact, search me and see if there's some hurtful way in me. Is there something I'm about to do today or in the next moment that's going to injure somebody? It's going to create tension. It's going to spread a lie. It's going to divide people up. It's going to make people angry with each other. That might even turn a church into an infighting group of people where we stop focusing on ministry and we start focusing on what's wrong with each other. Oh God, don't let me do anything. Spare me from being guilty of hurting someone, of hurting a family, of destroying my kids, of hurting my dear, dear wife or husband. Lord, I can say such cruel things. I think such ugly thoughts. Lord, search me and know me. Know my anxious thoughts, because I don't. And see if there's any hurtful way in me And Lord, lead me in the everlasting way. Lead me in the eternal way. Instead of picking up the phone and saying something nasty, let me pick up the phone and say something affirming. Instead of sitting here and sauteing in my own anger and frustration and just becoming a bitter, angry person, lead me in an everlasting way. Let me be a help. Let me be a minister. Let me be an encourager. Let me be a lover. Let me be your witness to everybody I see. Let my light so shine before people that they see my good works and glorify my Father who is in heaven. What does God know? He knows us better than we know ourselves. He loves us more than we love ourselves. He accepts us more completely than we accept ourselves. And He can guide us and help us in a way that we can't even dream of. Thank you, O God, that you search us and you know us and you put your hand upon us and your right hand upon us to guide us and to use us. Thank you, Lord, for this beautiful psalm.